Welcome to the Urban Engine Podcast, propelling ideas forward.
Hey guys, welcome to Urban Engine Podcast number 11. I'm Matt McClellan. I'm here with LJ Abrams and Andy McCloy. Guys, thanks for joining again. Happy to have you.
I'm happy to be here.
It's no problem, guys. I'm here anyway, so.
See, the interesting dynamic about having us three in this room here versus having Tony is we have no feminine balance. There's a lot of testosterone in here right now. I'm not sure if we're going to work out, we're going to chant before we go hit the football field together before a game, or if we're going to talk about some entrepreneurial topics.
All very masculine stuff.
Yeah. So one of the things I would like for us to go through today, and Andy's got a fantastic pass of this, and I'll tell you just a little bit about that, but is figuring out that point when you should try something new in your business. And, you know, Andy and I have known each other for several years now, but really come to get to know each other over the last several months. And the first time we had lunch, I kind of told you, hey, you know, you've kind of reinvented yourself over the last few years, you know, because I've seen you at a glance for a while. I've watched what you were doing early on and then how you've changed over those last several years. So I would love for kind of our listeners to understand, like, and look at themselves and try to know when is it time to try something new in your business?
Yeah. There's a million different ways I could go with that because I think there's a lot of variables that affect when you should make that decision. But essentially, it comes down to when something isn't working for you anymore, right? So one of the big things for me, and going back probably 6-7 years ago, was when we really changed our philosophy on how to train young athletes. That was a big thing. What I found is I was valuing the research and what other experts in the field did more than trusting my own intuition and experience relative to my market. And young athletes were being trained incredibly hard, a high focus on max effort, squatting and deadlifting and those things. And we kind of pivoted and went the opposite way with an understanding they're already doing a lot of this stuff at school and we need to meet kids where they are. So it got to a point where I felt what we were doing was wrong, right? It quit working. So we had to face that.
What made you come to that realization? Like, did you just walk in one day and your hair was a little messed up and you're like, something's not right here? Or was it some feedback you were getting from your clients or from your trainers?
I think it was more kind of like the back end work that I was doing on myself, conversations that I was having with other people in the industry. Like, a lot of times I think, especially in the fitness industry, right, we fall victim to this, like, this is how things are done approach, right? This is what we do in sport performance. We start with power movements, then we go to strength. There's this flow of how we're supposed to do stuff. And I started to question that because if you look at the research, all the research that it was done that people in my community actually follow, like Tudor Bumpa or Yuri Verkhoshansky, like this research was done on Olympic athletes. So taking that information and applying it to the average 15-year-old, you would think that would have been enough to recognize that that was a problem. But I wasn't confident enough at that point, nor did I have enough evidence that it was doing harm. What the big realization was for me is when we would communicate with athletes at what they're doing at school and the intensity and the loading that they were doing at school. And then we would come back and we were essentially replicating that, maybe different exercises, but there was no variability in the intensity, and we weren't covering other gaps that I think needed to be covered. So that awareness around that was a big deal. And then I just think also, like, awareness and confidence in yourself. Like, you have to be willing to step out there and say, like, I disagree with this. I know the majority of people in my industry are doing things this way, but again, based on my experience, I don't think this is the way to go. And that was a big, big thing.
Okay. I mean, that's a hard thing to do is to just, you know, examine inner self as a leader and then your business too, and kind of pick that apart and figure out, like, what we need to do differently here, right?
Sure. And we're in a similar space now. Like, I could go back to 2001, but I mean, right now, like, we're in a place where we've had so much growth and something needs to change. And what specifically needed to change is for me to get out of the way. I needed to hire some consultants outside of my industry to come in and look at what we're doing and critically analyze where we can get better. Because my bandwidth is over. Like, it's a wrap for me when it comes to scaling this thing to the next level. But bringing someone else in and using their brain, their social capital, intellectual capital, it's had a lot of value, a whole lot of value.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I think, so you realize something's going, you know, maybe not going the way you want it to, or you're kind of hit that stagnant point and you do need to make a change. So then where do you go from there?
I think there's a lot of ways you can go. I think, do you have the answers to fix the problem? You know, is probably the first question you need to ask yourself.
Well, if we did, we would have fixed it.
Right? Most likely. Yeah. Or some people intuitively know, like they know the answers, they just don't have the courage to act on them.
Yeah, that's
right?
Fair too.
So
yeah.
I think reaching outside, whether it's like what we talked about on the last podcast, meeting with other entrepreneurs, I think that has value. But probably the most valuable thing for me has been hiring coaches and consultants in and outside of my field. That was a hard thing for me because it's usually a pretty hefty investment. And when you're building a business, you can oftentimes look at those things as subtractions from your bottom line. But they certainly have improved our profit, the way that we do business as a whole, and made me a better person. You know, I think a lot of times all business owners kind of fall into a significance trap. They are sitting at the top. They got people working for them. They got people in the community that respect them. And they fear a lot of times that if they change something, some of that significance will dissipate or disappear.
And yeah, you hear Gary Vaynerchuk talk about all the time, the most dangerous thing you can ever do is say, this is the way it's always been done.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Absolutely. And if we're not continuing to question why we do what we do, we're failing our customers, we're failing our team.
Absolutely.
You know,
industries change. I mean, and your business changes over years, you know, especially for those that are in it for the long haul. If you're in a business for 2 years, sell it and get out and go to something different, you may not experience that change. But, you know, for you, you've been in this for how many years now?
18.
You've been in this for 18 years. I've been in my business for 9. The difference from the day one to now of the clientele, the methodology, the mission's still the same, right?
Sure.
The mission's always been the same. But the clientele, the products, the technology, the instruction, all of that's changed. The absorption and the demographic of people you're also training, especially in 18 years, completely different.
Yeah, I would even say, honestly, even my mission has changed, right? When I first, okay. I didn't get into business like the way a lot of people do. I was really young. I mean, I was 20 years old. And I just kind of knew I couldn't work for other people. And I had a child to take care of. My child was 4 years old by the time I was 20. So for me, it was, you know, I need to figure out a way to eat and feed my family. And this was the only thing I felt like I was not necessarily good at, but really capable of being good at. You know, so in the beginning for me, it was just make a lot of money. That's it. I just want to make a lot of money. That was the only focus for me. And now, like, we
survival
have this
survival and instinct.
Survival
point,
and instinct, right?
Right?
Just meet my financial needs to survive, right? And but now it's very much about how we can impact and change a community. Like, we have this very altruistic goal of using our facility as a means for change, using fitness as a vehicle to improve the quality of somebody's life. And that's a real mission for us. I'm not so sure we always do a good job of communicating that within our doors, but that's something that we're working on. My mission's definitely
changed. And I love
that
you went that route just now, because I think that's important to understand, too, that it is okay for your mission to change.
Yeah.
And as you get better, I think it should alter a little bit, right? Because then you have a better focus on what really matters. And, you know, the case in point that I've come to think about here in the most recent weeks, you know, having two friends pass away and poor health was the cause, right? How many bodies do we get, Andy? Just get one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so how are those hips feeling?
Awful. Yeah.
And you're about to have a double hip replacement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To our point about, like, you know, I probably should have thought about this when we were talking earlier, but like why we made the change relative to our training system. I had my own experience to max up against that, right? So like when I was in high school, it was heavy max effort work, and then I went to the gym afterwards and I did more heavy work, and you know, here I am 39 years old, I need both my hips replaced. I don't, like, if I improve a kid's 40 to a 4.4, let's say he does make it to play a college ball or even the NFL, but if he's at my age looking at a hip replacement, I'd feel like I failed that kid.
Absolutely.
You know, so.
Yeah. I mean, and that's when you really have to refocus on back, like, again, what matters. Like, you got one body, you know,
yeah.
And so now you realize, like, helping people live a quality life and, like, staying intact for the long run, like, it's fantastic and a huge accomplishment if you can go play pro ball, right? But after that pro ball season, maybe it lasts 2 years, maybe it lasts 20. Very unlikely it lasts 20 for most of them, right?
Yeah.
But again, they're coming out beat up from all those years of training, you know, whether they're training appropriately or not. What matters most? Maybe living with some of that success that they've created for themselves? Like, what does all the money and houses and everything do if they can't walk?
Can't go enjoy it.
Yeah, if you can't enjoy it. So I think that's great that you refocused back on that and, like, creating a positive change in people's lives so they can live a healthier and longer, happier lifestyle rather than just making them improve that 40 time, improving that squat lift, whatever it is, right?
Because you can improve those markers really fast And that looks really impressive for like Instagram and your testimonials and all that. But if you go back and check with that client, you know, in 20 years, to me, that's what really defines how well you serve them. And, you know, talking about like why you need to change too. So one thing that came to mind for me is not only revisiting your mission, but revisiting your values and are you actually using your company values? So like around 2011 is when I started really kind of, maybe 13 now that I'm thinking about it, really started digging into values, right? Because I had known from the very first business book I ever read, like you need company values and you use these words like integrity, compassion, right? And these things are just kind of vague and ambiguous. They don't really drive the way you do business.
Right.
And I went and did a mentorship with a guy named Mike Boyle, who most people call him like the godfather of functional training. And I was in Boston, Massachusetts. And I remember Mike used this term, do no harm. That is your number one objective, do no harm. And around that time, I was also studying values. And I was like, that's got to become a value of ours. Do no harm. Mentally, physically, emotionally, like our job is to build the human spirit, not take away from it. And now what we've done is like our values guide everything that we do. Like one of our values is Kaizen, so constant never-ending improvement. Everybody on our team reads. Everybody on our team, we use something called Core 4 to grade them out each week to make sure that they're doing these things and living it. Do no harm is one of our values. Be a pro is one of our values. Sweep the sheds is one of ours. But even like I'm throwing those words out now into the people listening, they have absolutely zero meaning. So what we had to do is come up with a clarifying statement for like what does each one of those things mean? And then because values drive behavior, we took a word like Kaizen and identified three specific behaviors that some of somebody living that value, and then three specific behaviors of somebody living in conflict or contrast to that value, to create this very clear way to assess is somebody showing up the way we want them to show up. So what that's done a lot for me is like it's a mirror again. It shows me like, are we doing things the way we're supposed to do them? Are things working, right? Do we need to pivot? Do we need to make some changes? Because I believe these values are accurate right now. And if we're having trouble executing these values, maybe it needs to be a staff change, right? Maybe we just need to reassess our values because we're not willing to commit to that.
Yeah.
But I think values and using them as a way to grade behavior is a great way to assess, are you moving in the right direction or do you need to change something possibly?
Well, and I think, you know, using that as that benchmarker and that measuring stick too for your company to see if you need to make that change is important. You know, I went to the Make-A-Wish wish granter session the other day, and when they read off their company values, like it almost gave me goosebumps, you know, because they're so well focused around that value set and what their mission is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can guarantee they stay true to that, because I found myself in that meeting watching, you know, the two people that actually work for Make-A-Wish for a living, and watching their behaviors, listening to the way they talked about it, and man, they're drawn in. Like, that is their true north, right? And so they're acting on that true north, and I was thinking about the training they went through to then try to train us as wish granters, right, and to pass along that value set and from their company. And I'm like, they did such a fantastic job of training them, but I don't think they trained them to say this and say this and say this. They trained them on that value set, and that's what drove them to stay true north, like I said. You know, so that's one way to kind of measure and see that's when you need to know and make a change. I think I've kind of experienced the opposite over time, that I think I changed in my business over time. Both I changed and my business changed. And I think later on, I started looking at it when I realized that something needed to change. And it was actually to go back and focus on some of the things we did in the beginning. It wasn't that we needed to try something new. The problem was that we had tried so many things new that we had forgotten where we came from a little bit.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
I think about where I'm currently at, right? So, you know, it's funny. The name of my business, Tall Guys Photography, doesn't even encompass like most of what we do anymore. You know, for us, the industry changed. You know, there was a change in what, you know, from us specifically, what people who wanted content, what they wanted. You know, you looked at 5 years ago, it was all about photography. But, you know, with technology changing, with the additional bandwidth, you know, video has become, you know, the way that people consume content, whether it's for corporate, whether it's for personal, whether it's weddings. And so with us, we've had to make this transition from we're a couple guys who shoot pictures, you know, to all of a sudden we're a full-blown media organization we do photo, we do video, we do audio. I mean, and if it's media, it's something we had to be able to do. And so it forced us to change. We weren't able to be just, oh, we're just some guys that take pictures. And I believe if you're in the media space and that's all you do now, you're going to get left behind.
Well, and
stay
you
on top of your industry.
You have the very thing that you keep in your pocket every day that's competing with you, right?
Right.
Like the iPhone's now got the portrait mode. So I don't even know how to focus an f-stop on a camera.
Exactly.
Right? A digital SLR. I got this thing that's going to do a portrait mode for me and give me a fantastic 90% alternative, and I don't have to pay anybody for it.
Right. And so that's one of the other things. You know, you have to differentiate yourself, and that's a big deal in the wedding industry now. You've got everyone and their mother has a DSLR, right? So I'm going into consultations and meeting with potential brides, and they're like, oh, well, you know, but my uncle said he'd do it for $100.
Yeah.
And, and I've got this, you know, $2,500 price tag on the table, and they're like, and how do you compete with $100? Right. And so then we had to figure out, well, how do we compete in this market? And what we said is, we're going to differentiate ourselves, right? So from our team, not only can you get that photography, but you can get that video as well. And if you're a corporate client, you want the podcasting, or you want audio, or you want, you know, radio spots, those are all things that we can do. And so right now we're actually in the process of changing over all of our branding and our media and everything else for our business. But when the industry changes, you have to change with it, and that's what we found and are going through.
That's a huge thing. And being an early adopter, or being willing to like roll the dice on something that might not be an industry standard to be the first one to market, I think also has a ton of value. And I can only use my experience as an example, but if you look out into the fitness world, just look at how like fitness is advertised a lot, right? Like you'll see people like on the internet, pictures of people laying on the ground in piles of sweat, right? So like fitness has become this very intensity-based thing. Well, I think what we're going to see in the next couple years is people coming back to center and understanding that like killing yourself is not necessarily the way to go. And I've seen this change happen across all industries, even in certain brands that are known for their intensity. People are now scaling down to a more moderate approach. And I think we're going to continue to see that in the fitness industry. But that's a scary thing to put your name behind, because the average consumer wants to get slaughtered. They think they need a hard, intense workout in order for it to be beneficial. That's because they don't understand the other side of the equation. They don't understand that you're only sleeping 6 hours a night and the quality of it is really poor, and that your four kids subtract energy from you all day, and that your job is so stressful that that's eating away at your nervous system. And because you may not be blocking time, and time is imposing itself on you, you have all these other variable stressors. And then when you go work out, that's just another stressor added into your life. And without the management of that, what I should say is the intensity should meet your daily readiness level. There may be some days where you're ready to get smashed, but there's more often than not where you need a more moderate approach. And we're actively trying to find ways to, one, communicate that message more into the community, into our members, and then literally build our programs and our checks and balances around that. And that, as I meet with people and we start talking in this way, like you can almost see a disconnect in the beginning, but I'm committed to this because I really believe it's where our industry's headed.
Yeah, man, dude. You're giving me goosebumps just sitting here. Like I'm starting to sweat a little bit just because it's getting so intense.
Yeah.
But I love it. No, this is awesome information for everybody listening in, because you know that's a two-part scenario. Well, three really. I use the two again. See, I do
but
that.
But there
time.
Is three.
There is three. So there's the first, identifying that maybe something needs to change, right?
Yeah.
And there's the second part that's figuring out where do we go from there. And third part is implementing that and executing it. And I think you just covered all of those bases, right?
It was an accident.
Clearly not. It comes
Don't
from
give
experience.
Me that much credit. Yeah.
Yeah, clearly not. It comes from experience. But I think, you know, guys, if you're looking at sales growth is not always the measurement on whether you need to try something new. And I want to drive that home for you, because there's a lot of other things. There's consumer satisfaction, your customer satisfaction, right? There's your team's satisfaction about what they're doing on a daily basis, and if they're having fun doing it or enjoying it. There's you, yourself. Are you having fun and enjoying it? And if it stopped being fun for you, why did that happen?
Yeah.
Then, yes, you look at your financial markers, like, are we growing in revenue? But if we are growing that revenue number, are we growing in profit, or are we going backwards? Like, what's changing, right?
Yeah.
You know, because there's a lot of factors that matter into if I should do something new. Do you just hate the look of your company now, or the way you're perceived in a marketplace? That's a PR marketing change, right? So there's a lot of different things you can look at on why you would want to try something new. And I'd like to think that you not only redeveloped your kind of key focus is your brand, Andy, but you also looked at how you were perceived in the marketplace. You're perceived as like a hardcore athlete only training studio.
Yes.
Is that all you wanted to be?
No. And we started out, when I started my company, it was very general fitness oriented. Like what I wanted to do was create franchise prototypes that you would put in different gyms. And that came from my experience working in gyms in the Washington, D.C. area where one company had exclusivity contracts over all those gyms. So like that's what I wanted to do. But again, it was about I want to make a lot of money. That was it. I want to build these things. I want to sell them and I want to make money. The industry started to change a little bit anyway. Gyms started doing a lot of stuff in-house as opposed to allowing contractors. So like that probably should have been the first red flag that we needed to pivot and change course. But I was young and ignorant and, you know, just thought I'd keep crushing.
You went from working, you know, a lot of these high name clients, like really well known, you know, a lot of them NFL players or other pro sports players, and then getting into your high schools, and then you did a lot of training, like kind of contract, like you just said, in with those high schools, and you were their strength coach or their speed coach or whatever else,
yeah.
Conditioning coach. And, you know, then you've kind of come back and you don't go out there and tote that you work with just Reggie Ragland or, you know, any of these big pro names that people would recognize as your sales pitch, right? Because
no.
This mom over here of four that needs to be in better shape to keep up with her kids doesn't care about you working with Reggie Ragland.
Right. And one of the things, I mean, outside of splitting our focus now and kind of bringing adult fitness back in after years of focusing just on athletes, now how we communicate to both those markets is segmented. So like we do communicate to athletes in a very specific way, and if it's a general fitness person, we gear all our messaging towards what they need to hear too. And that was something that we historically didn't do. It was like, hey, look, we're BCI, we're awesome, come train with us, right? And we found that that was confusing to the customer. So now we try to speak the language that they think they'll absorb the most.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think, yeah, just looking at, too, what you're missing out on, like that target that you're shooting for, and you keep missing those shots, you've got to really look at, like, what are we doing wrong here? And it was your
message. Let me say this, like, so, like, the problem a lot of times is not the problem, right? So, like, I would have told you that issue was a sales problem. We couldn't sell people, okay? But that wasn't the issue. It was in our messaging. It was in our marketing. We were confusing people. That was creating a sales issue. So like the problem is not, I don't know how many times I've talked to a business owner and be like, man, I'm just having a problem. I'm not getting a lot of leads. I'm like, well, how many leads are you getting? And in my industry, it might be 8 to 10 a week. You got a lead problem? You're getting 8 to 10 a week. You sure you got a lead problem? Yeah, man, they're just bad leads. Are they setting up appointments? Yeah, about 50% of them. Okay, well, what happens then? Well, they're just not signing up. Well, maybe there's a value problem. Maybe there's a sales problem. Maybe there's a communication problem. Maybe you got the wrong guy in the seat selling the program, right? So like sometimes the problem is not the problem, and it warrants you taking a deeper look at how everything affects everything.
Man, I'm gonna cut it off right there because I don't think we can get any better for this episode.
Boom. Yeah,
that was like, amazing.
Yeah, dude,
boom.
Andy, thank you so much for being
thank
on the
you.
Podcast.
Yeah.
Loved having you on here. As always, enjoy your friendship. LJ, thank you so much for joining in with us today also, man. Always love you being a part of it. So.
It's no problem, man. I'm always here.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Well, guys,
really
thanks for listening in. We'll catch you next time.
Peace.
Peace.